This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Hey, real quick, be a friend to the podcast. Take a second and hit the subscribe button and or leave us a review on whatever podcasting platform you listen through. It's a quick and little thing to do, but it really helps our show find its way to the ears of new athletes. I'm pumped for our podcast today. We have a great guest joining us, and we'll be talking about the movement of women participating in endurance sports, cycling in particular. Joining us from sunny and scenic coastal Florida is Rachel Maney. Rachel serves as the National Director for Bike Law, a network of independent bicycle crash attorneys. She's a multiple-time Ironman finisher who has represented Team USA at the ITU Long Distance Triathlon World Championships. And she's also a passionate advocate for women in cycling and serves on the advisory board for Women's Cycling Day. So Rachel, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
I'm so glad to be back. Thank you so much. We have a lot of exciting things that are happening and coming down the pike before the end of the calendar year. So it's an honor and a privilege to be speaking with you again.
Also joining us today is pro triathlete and coach Elizabeth James. Elizabeth came to the sport from a soccer background and quickly rose through the triathlon ranks using TriDot, from a beginner to top age grouper to a professional triathlete. She's a Kona and Boston Marathon qualifier who has coached triathletes with TriDot since 2014. Elizabeth, are you excited to talk about Women's Cycling Day with me and Rachel?
Oh, yes. Absolutely excited. I already know that this is going to be a great episode. Let's do it.
I'm your host, Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and the captain of the middle of the pack. Fun social media-related warm-up question today before we dive into our conversation with Elizabeth and Rachel about Women's Cycling Day. Then the cool down, we'll be talking about an awesome event coming up called Challenge Daytona, a multi-sport event based at the famous Daytona International Speedway near scenic Daytona Beach, Florida. Sign me up. It's going to be a great show. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
There are many professional athletes across all sports who are quality folks to follow on social media. The pros who post regular content have an opportunity to update fans on their training, promote their sponsors, and show a little bit more of their personality on social media. In endurance sports, there are a ton of great athletes with a fun and engaging social media presence. And Rachel, Elizabeth, I know both of you are very active on social media, and so for our warm-up question today, who is your favorite pro triathlete to follow on the social media machine? Rachel, welcome back to the show. Glad to have you again. And we're going to throw you in to answer this question first.
Probably Heather Jackson. She is a dear personal friend of mine. She's also an industry partner with Bike Law, and she's a phenomenal human. I think there's a lot of pressure on the pros, especially female pros, to not only compete and perform at the highest elite levels, but also against men in sport who dominate every facet of professional racing, right down to the number of available slots in some of the most competitive and important races for people who make a living in sport. Heather's always been super down to earth. She is empathetic and kind and committed. She's compassionate. And what I love most about following her on social is that she's willing to use her platform to advocate for safer biking and cultural change, to really give her fans and fellow multi-sport athletes a good look into what her day-to-day life is like. Very, very down to earth and honest. And most importantly, the celebration of all the stuff that makes triathlon and riding a bike so special. Her passion and her insatiable relationship with cycling makes her one of the most dynamic pro triathletes in my book. When she's not training for races, she's somewhere on the side of a mountain or on a trail, you know, riding her bike with her family, her husband, her friends. And I think that's really special.
Yeah, really special and really fun to, you know, see pictures, you know, of what she's doing and how active her family is. She's always dropping kind of some hints to upcoming Wadi Inc. You know, Kit goodness on her feet as well. And yeah, so Heather Jackson is a fantastic pick. And Elizabeth, as a pro yourself, you know, I know you are well aware of how much hard work goes just into posting worthwhile content on social media, you know, to kind of build that following. You know, who is a pro that you follow that is just crushing it right now, that all of our listeners should go give a follow to?
Gosh, I know we say this a lot, but sometimes I feel like these warm-up questions are a whole lot harder than actually what we discuss later. This is a tough one, too, just because there are so many amazing triathletes that I follow, and I could list a bunch, and it would take up our entire episode here. I certainly follow your well-known names in the sport, your podium finishers, all the way from the ITU events to the Kona Legends. Two that really just kind of came to mind as we were talking through this here, Danielle Dingman and Ruth Assel. And those are two of my favorites, just, I mean, in this current couple weeks here. Danielle recently won the first pro event in the U.S. post-COVID, the Bear Lake Brawl in Idaho. And so that was just kind of really cool to...
The Bear Lake Brawl.
Yes, yeah.
Fantastic event name, just for starters.
I mean, they had miserable, tough conditions. And so... just anybody that raced that deserves a shout out and a big pat on the back accomplishment. But then just to, you know, kind of see her headed into the event and really to come away with that win was amazing. And then Ruth is, gosh, just a force to be reckoned with. This is her first year as a pro triathlete. And that's after winning the 30 to 34 age group last year in Kona in 2019. And she's going to be a name that we see frequently on the podium. So, I mean, those two came to mind. And then one of the other things that Rachel said that I just kind of want to touch on a little bit more too, you know, in addition to all these amazing triathletes, my mind immediately went to the elite runner, Kara Goucher. And I've followed her for a long time, even before I knew what a triathlon was. And especially during this unique year, I've really appreciated the perspective that she has provided. And, you know, social media can be such a fantastic way for us to stay connected to one another and can provide that great sense of camaraderie and motivation. But it can present a number of challenges because we as humans are just naturally and constantly comparing ourselves to others. And this can be tough because some athletes don't post that whole picture. And, you know, Rachel was talking about the great job that Heather Jackson does with showing things beyond the training. And for me, I think that's a really important thing for these pros to be doing. You know, some people only post their fastest workouts or the great race results, but following athletes like Heather Jackson and Kara is so good for me because they capture the whole view and they give that healthy perspective outside of sport, you know, celebrating wedding anniversaries, raising a family, spending time doing things outside of the training too.
Just a little reminder that there's a little bit more to life than this, right? Mm-hmm. Even for the pros. No, that's great. I think as you're talking about the Bear Lake Brawl, I'm reminded of, two accounts I follow. They're not the ones I'm going to give my ultimate shout out to today, but I follow pro triathlete Ben Canute, is one of my follows. He raced the Bear Lake Brawl.
Yep.
And then I follow Talbot Cox, who's a media guy that shoots a lot of the pros, does a lot of their behind the scenes YouTube content, is there on race day to shoot a lot of events. And just with a media background, I like following Talbot just to kind of see what he's up to, you know, as he's shooting these events. And they are both at the Bear Lake Brawl. So I did kind of hear about that event as well. But the ultimate one I want to give a shout out to, because I follow a lot of pros. I now follow Rachel Maney after our last episode with her, and she's a quality follow. I follow pro triathlete Elizabeth James, who's a quality follow. But I want to give a shout out to Ben and Heather Deal. And if you've never heard of them, they're both pros. They're a young, married, 20-something couple, and they're both pro triathletes. They earn their pro card. They started off with a online blog called Deals on Wheels, where they literally were kind of traveling around the country, living out of their van, training and racing triathlons, and just documenting it on their blog. And I didn't discover them then, but I discovered them on Instagram. They're just a really funny follow. So Ben and Heather Deal are my shout out.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Just a few shows back on episode 49, Rachel Maney from Bike Law gave us a crash course on cycling safety. And during that conversation, her passion for women's participation in endurance sports just briefly came up. I left that conversation just immediately knowing that I had to get Rachel back on the show to talk about women's representation in the sport and the movement to encourage more female participants in cycling. And with the inaugural Women's Cycling Day coming up on October 10th, 2020, there's just no better time to talk about this. So, Rachel, let's kind of get rolling today by just kind of tell us how you became so passionate about women entering and enjoying the sport of cycling.
Well, you know, I'm a woman myself, and because I love nothing the way that I love to ride my bike, you know, it's kind of a very natural or organic progression going from, you know, being a little girl who used to ride around her neighborhood to now finding myself in the position that I'm in, both recreationally, in competition, and professionally. My female friends in sport and the women that are in the Bike Law Network are some of the bravest, most committed, capable, strongest women that I know. And being part of their tribe makes me proud and hopeful about the future of biking. I think that women will inevitably change the role that cycling plays in safer, scalable transit and transportation. That facet of riding a bicycle certainly has to come first. And after that, the bike boom can continue in a way that could possibly resemble Dutch or European cycling. And that is, after all, the model used by several nonprofit and advocacy groups here in the US, and is certainly the model used by USAC and USAT in the context of riding and racing growth.
So I was just in kind of crafting this episode and kind of thinking through the talking points. I was just thinking to my own experiences, you know, just with local group rides, you know, local triathlon and road running events. And there seems to be just a much higher percentage of female participation at triathlon and run specific events as opposed to cycling events. Is this kind of what both of you see across the board, or is that just kind of maybe where I'm at on my local group ride?
I think that there's some irony there, because women on bikes make up the greatest percentage of riders in North America.
Really?
When we look at the really impactful and sizable growth of riding a bicycle in the U.S. in the last few decades, that growth is predicated upon women on bikes. I think that this is probably a more nuanced question or topic of conversation, because there are elements to multi-sport communities, or our multi-sport community, that are far more inclusive and inviting than you may find in road racing or in competitive cycling, for sure. I think that's one of the things that we touched on in the last conversation we had with the last podcast episode, which is that what I love so much about triathlon is that sense of community and camaraderie and fellowship. So I would agree with you that within multi-sport, if I go to a triathlon and it could be a local sprint or it could be Kona World Championships, there is a much greater balance between men and women participants than there is in road riding or cyclocross or BMX or track racing. And those inequities, those gender inequities, are things that need to be addressed for sure. And Women's Cycling Day is a fantastic tool or celebratory experience to advance the ball in that direction.
I love that you brought that up, because in my personal experience, I do see that as well, that there seems to be kind of that higher percentage maybe in triathlon or run specific events. But then, you know, I go out for a cycle ride and it seems like the percentage of women is relatively small. And yet you were able to point to that women on bikes makes up the greatest percentage of riders in North America. Mm-hmm. So I'm just excited. And I know that we'll touch on that a little bit more throughout the episode too, about some of those discrepancies, and then how, you know, this event coming up with Women's Cycling Day can be a great opportunity to get more women involved.
And you mentioning that, you know, women on bikes make up the majority of riders in North America. You know, what are some of the other kind of interesting stats about women's engagement in cycling? And have we maybe made any progress in participation in recent years?
So I think that, you know, the popularity of women's cycling has kind of ebbed and flowed a little bit throughout history. And there's certainly some differences in participation by country and region as well. So going back a little bit here, and I'm not going to give a full history of the bicycle. We could spend an entire podcast episode on that. But I do want to just put this a little bit in context here. So the bicycle is dated back to 1817 with the German invention of, you know, what they called the running machine or the hobby horse. And then in the 1850s, we see the bicycle that includes pedals. Now, many of these early bicycles with the larger pedals.
What was a bicycle before pedals? There was a bike that didn't have pedals?
Yeah, it was just, I mean, wheels, and you would basically use your feet and the momentum of the wheels to kind of push you forward, which is why they called it the running machine. So you still had to kind of propel yourself forward.
Just to push pin that, if we look at how we introduce very small children to cycling, the Strider bikes are incredibly efficacious in introducing bikes to very, very small children. And it's the same ideology. It's the same engineering and design that without pedals, you learn first about balance and maintaining control of the bike before, you know, adding that extra component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And in the 1800s, you know, as we're talking about kind of these different advances, that, you know, larger front wheel that had, you know, the pedals attached to it.
The penny farthing.
Oh, yes. That was considered rather dangerous. And so it was kind of only ridden by those brave and daring young men.
It looks rather dangerous.
and probably was. And women interested in riding that were faced with some of the hurdles of accessibility just to... due to women's fashion at the time. I mean, the long skirts kind of prevented them from being able to access the bike frame.
They didn't have Lycra yet.
Yes. Yeah. Not yet. now in the 1880s and 1890s, kind of what was deemed as the safety bicycle was invented. And this included your rear wheel chain drive, and it didn't have as large of a difference in the wheel size from the front wheel, to the rear wheels. And then additionally, a ladies' version of the bicycle became available kind of by the 1890s as well. And so this women's version had a step-through frame, kind of what we would consider now as that lowered top tube, rather than the diamond frame of kind of the gentleman's models, so that the ladies with their dresses and skirts could easily mount and ride the bicycles. And then this also commonly came with a skirt guard to prevent the skirts and the dresses from becoming entangled in the rear wheel and the spokes.
But were the skirt guards aero?
I don't know.
Were they carbon? Did they have a carbon offer?
And moisture wicking.
Were they moisture wicking?
And actually, you know, one of my absolute favorite quotes about women cycling comes from this time period too. In 1896, Susan B. Anthony said, you know, "Let me tell you what I think of bicycling. I think it's done more to emancipate women than anything else." And then she goes on to talk about how it just gives women this feeling of freedom and self-reliance. And she says, "I stand and rejoice every time I see a woman ride by on a wheel." And I think that's still just a great picture. And so you see that, you know, during this time frame, women's cycling was actually gaining quite a bit of popularity. But then we kind of see it drop off dramatically, especially in the United States in the early 1900s. Automobiles became kind of your preferred method of transportation. By the 1920s, it was considered more of like a children's toy than, you know, a necessary mode of transportation. And then by the 1940s, most bicycles in the United States were specifically made for children. And so we see kind of this dramatic dip. But it wasn't necessarily a worldwide thing either. I think we saw that more in the United States than we did in other countries. So since then, and kind of since that dip, we've seen female participation in cycling increase. But kind of, you know, one of the main things we're going to talk about too today is just this opportunity for Women's Cycling Day to give us that opportunity to further grow the sport.
What we're seeing here, Rachel, is a quick glimpse into professional triathlete Elizabeth James's previous life as a school teacher, where she brought up the facts and figures and taught us a little bit there. So that was super interesting. Rachel, where are we at just now in terms of women's involvement as cyclists?
Well, at first, I kind of want to piggyback off of what Elizabeth said. First and foremost, teachers are incredibly important. I'm a huge fan of soccer, also incredibly important. And I love everything that you said because it really gives kind of a detailed look into where we've come from and perhaps to where we might want to return, if that makes sense. And
yeah.
we circle the wagons and we look at the importance of the bike before, right? It was invented long before the invention of the car, thereby giving us rights to the road as cyclists long before the invention of the car. And today in the US, about 60% of bicycle owners are women between the ages of 17 and 28. That's a pretty significant number of American cyclists. And for me, you know, I think some people, they define a cyclist as somebody who's kitted up in Lycra, matching shoes, helmet, you know, maybe somebody with a disc wheel. For me, it's anybody who pushes the pedals around. And so in the US, there's approximately 55 million of us cyclists, that is. When we look at the scalable growth of bicycling in the U.S., it's predicated upon female ridership. And additionally, women of color are responsible for the most significant increase in biking in the last two decades. So much so that almost 30% of people on bikes in the U.S. are counted in that particular demographic. Women are much more likely than men to demand safer biking conditions and infrastructure. If we look at the inequities in the treatment of female cyclists, either in sport or as utilitarian bicyclists and commuters compared to our male counterparts, it's so great that even in bike advocacy, we see a larger number of women who are brave enough and willing to fight for the cultural and social improvements needed to make our roads safer for all who ride. I know that within my bike law network, the female bicycle crash attorneys with whom I work are some of the most active and dedicated and successful bike advocates, as well as strong competitive riders in the industry. Going back to kind of the avenue down which Elizabeth was taking us, looking at the role that our country's cycling population compared to the rest of the world and the historical implications are concerned. When I think about, or I think when most people think about where bicycling is most celebrated and thereby the safest, Denmark, Germany, Spain, France, these European countries all come to mind.
Yeah.
But I think at the top of the list, no other country has done bicycling the way that the Dutch do bikes. As recently as the late 60s, early 70s, inadequate infrastructure and the prioritization of motor vehicle transportation, like Elizabeth was talking about here, began to force women and their families from these densely populated urban areas or cities into the suburbs. So moving out of Rotterdam, Amsterdam, et cetera, and into these suburban areas where they'd be forced to commute by car, just completing that cycle of prioritizing motor vehicle transit. It was the female cycling population in the Netherlands that fought for better biking. They were responsible for the drastic changes in bike culture, resulting only 10 years later with a complete transformation in Dutch mobility. So a women's group called Stoep de Kindernoord pioneered the way, for Dutch bike culture, which is emulated now by most countries, especially by the U.S. So to put it in perspective, I'm a numbers girl as well. The cycling crash fatalities in 1969 in the Netherlands were upwards of almost 600 per year. Today, the Dutch people are given tax credits for bike commuting. The total number of cycling deaths is less than one-third what it was before women bicyclists, decided to fight for safe, sustainable cycling. And additionally, the number of non-bicycle related traffic deaths there are less than 700 a year. Just for comparison purposes, in the US, that number is somewhere close to 40,000 traffic fatalities per calendar year. So if it isn't safe to walk, it's not safe to ride. And if it isn't safe to ride, then it probably isn't safe to drive either. If we look at Mothers Against Drunk Driving as the template for change, it's another woman-led organization that revolutionized, albeit for a short period of time, relatively, transportation safety in ways that no government organization or roundtable of male policymakers could have possibly imagined.
So, Rachel, Elizabeth, I know that you are both obviously very competitive triathletes, you know, who've competed at a professional level. You know, but as we talk about cycling in particular, you know, what got each of you kind of started in the sport?
Let's go back to what Elizabeth said, and she quoted Susan B. Anthony, and there is no greater or freer, more joyful feeling for me than riding a bike. And anyone who had one as a kid remembers that empowering sensation of cruising or coasting around without a care in the world, and getting back to that as a young adult was very organic for me. Being a distance runner and mediocre swimmer with lots of triathlete friends provided the perfect space for me to begin cycling too. And it just looked so fun. And it turns out that it actually is.
Who knew that Susan B. Anthony would get so much play on this podcast episode?
You know?
The OG, the legend. Elizabeth, how about you? How did you get into cycling?
So I just absolutely love thinking back on this. It brings a huge smile to my face. A wonderful woman, Cindy Arias, got me started in the sport of cycling. And I think some of our listeners have heard part of this story before about how I went to a spin class at a local YMCA and was just, I mean, fascinated by this instructor. She was, you know, multiple time triathlete, fantastic runner, and just mean cyclist. And I mean that in the best way possible.
Of course you do. Yeah.
Just super strong. Seemed like she knew everything about anything to do with cycling. And she just took me under her wing and saw something in me that I did not know existed yet, and really supported me in getting started. I mean, she brought me to a bike shop and basically said, "This is the bike that you're going to buy." And then took me out on the roads and, you know, here's how we change a flat. Here's what clipless pedals are. And, oh, you're still riding in your running shorts. Like, let's get you a pair of cycling shorts. And, pulled me around numerous rides on the Nebraska country roads, took me on a trip to Colorado, and really just helped me fall in love with the sport.
So we've talked already about just the influence that women have on cycling as an industry, whether it's the Dutch cycling infrastructure and safety that the Dutch women kind of created that's been populated worldwide, to North America having more female cyclists than male cyclists when you look at people that are actually owning and riding bikes. You know, the influence of women on the sport is already far deeper than I would have imagined going into this conversation. And so when we talk about Women's Cycling Day, which at the time that this podcast is being recorded, at the time this podcast will be published, is coming up very soon. It's October 10th, 2020. And this is an inaugural event for Women's Cycling Day. If you listen to this episode after October 10th, it will have already happened. But be on the lookout for it coming around again next year in 2021. But Rachel, just tell us, where did this idea for this inaugural Women's Cycling Day come from?
So yeah, to clarify for everybody that's listening, it will always be the second Saturday in October. So this year it happens to be on the 10th, although we're deferring the big celebratory weekend until Mother's Day weekend of 2021 because of COVID and some of these fluid challenges that we're all experiencing. But Women's Cycling Day was the vision and the dream of Heather Mason and Lauren Heffron. And Heather works with Bianchi, as well as being a contributing writer for a bicycle retailer. Lauren runs Ciclismo Classico, and the two of them came together, and, you know, two heads are always better than one. And when you have these two particular heads, what ended up the deliverable or the product was this Women's Cycling Festival that would promote this mission and ethos of inclusion and diversity and celebration and getting more women on bikes, that whatever challenges or hurdles or intimidation novice riders may feel, women novice riders may feel, that there is a place for all of the experienced ones to reach down and elevate them and bring them up exactly the way that Elizabeth was explaining her introduction to the bike. So it's, I think that the weekend, the Women's Cycling Day Festival weekend, is more so just a concentrated celebration of things that we can be doing every single day in our local communities, in our neighborhoods, at our local bike shops, at races, within our tri clubs, or on our cycling teams, that increases and grows scalable, safe ridership and rideshare amongst women on bikes.
Yeah. So for the festival itself, for that weekend, you know, what all does the event entail, and how can our listeners kind of participate and support?
So, yeah, like I mentioned, I think it's something that if we get into the habit of practicing these things every day, for example, you know, if there's somebody in your neighborhood or you have a girlfriend who has even asked the most innocuous of questions about your triathlon experience or your cycling experience, invite them to go for a ride with you. Get them in the saddle. It isn't a sprint. It is a marathon. And the mission and the goal is to grow our female riding community so that ridership and rideshare and participation in sport continue to develop and expand, and that women who might not have an opportunity, whether it's because they didn't have a childhood introduction to the bike or because they don't have friends that are triathletes or cyclists, that they're given this opportunity, this platform, this space to get in the saddle and fall in love with riding a bike.
So talk to me just a little bit about just kind of the industry support for Women's Cycling Day. When I was just kind of researching for this episode and looking at the event web pages, and there was just so many pictures of bike shops kind of doing what you're talking about, you know, encouraging women to ride and, you know, encouraging women to engage in the sport. I saw Bianchi jerseys and bikes everywhere, which as a Bianchi owner myself, I loved. But just kind of what are some of the brands or bike shops supporting the event, and how does their support help increase female participation in cycling?
That's a really great question. I think that oftentimes when we look at sponsors or partners for events or races, we're all kind of scanning the horizon for big names. And don't get me wrong, big names are important. I don't know where I'd be without my Garmin. I certainly don't know where I'd be without my Zip wheels, those types of things, right? But I think the reality and what's so brilliant about what Heather and Lauren have created is that the majority of people on bikes in North America are probably never going to compete in an Ironman, and they may never go to the cyclocross world championships or the track champion, you know, things like that. But they will ride their bicycle from their home to the grocery store, or maybe they commute to work, or perhaps that's their most loved family weekend activity, you know, getting on the trail with small children or your spouse or boyfriend, whoever it is. And so the shops and the local cycling clubs and these women-led organizations and bike clubs that are sponsors and participants in Women's Cycling Day, they open the door on a smaller, more grassroots, boots on the ground local level. And we have found at Bike Law, and we're a sponsor and partner of Women's Cycling Day, of course, but what we have found is that biting off really small pieces at a time is the most effective way to affect change on a much bigger level. So Women's Cycling Day gives these smaller local businesses, local bike shops, women's cycling clubs, an opportunity to participate in something that might otherwise cost them, could be tens of thousands of dollars for sponsorship or to participate in an event of this size.
As we're talking about, this event and the movement that is women's cycling, I'm kind of reminded of, so ever since Hamilton came out on Disney Plus, I think me and my wife have watched it like three times and listened to the soundtrack a lot in the office. There's a line in the Hamilton theater production that references, kind of the American forces in the Revolutionary War as it's not a moment, it's the movement. Mm-hmm. And I was reminded of that line, you know, as both of you, Elizabeth and Rachel, were talking, because the end goal, of course, is for this to be more than just a one-day event. You know, it's for this to be more than just kind of a slice of a movement, really, that is women's cycling. And so what are some of the other initiatives that are ongoing throughout the year to encourage women to get involved in the cycling community?
That it's not a moment, that it's a movement is exactly right. And we could come up with, there's probably a million metaphors. Most of the ones that I can think of are sports related, that it's not a sprint, it is a marathon. But start with your local shops. Start in your local communities. Ask them what they're doing to include and encourage women in sport and in the saddle. There are tons of women's only rides and women-led rides that provide great safe spaces for new female riders to get comfortable and confident with riding and even servicing their own bikes. Elizabeth mentioned that the woman that gave her this really warm, comfortable introduction to riding was checking every single one of the boxes that we at Bike Law believe are so important, right? How do you change a tire? How do you replace your chain? Like, what can you do to be autonomous with your bicycle? Those things are really important. When we look at the surveys in a variety of different communities, women who want to ride but end up not getting in the saddle, they express that the reasons are because they feel intimidated or afraid that they have not been given the type of treatment walking into a bike shop that makes them feel comfortable asking questions, that there is a lack of equity in opportunity or resources. And so those are things that, yeah, I mean, of course, we can create policies and we can demand on a much bigger scale that people change the way that they open that door for women to get in the saddle. But the most effective way, I think, to create more balance or shift that dynamic is for every female rider that's experienced to reach out to one that is less so, or that's never had the opportunity or joy of riding a bicycle, and invite them to come along with you to show them. And it's definitely a selfless act, you know, but the way I think about it is that if I have, let's say, you know, in peak full Ironman training, right, you're looking at 20 hours a week that you're spending doing a variety of different workouts. If I just take an hour of my time that, you know, I can prioritize and create the space for, and use that to invite other women, or even better, school-aged girls to get on the bicycle, that's going to impact change in a way that's very, very visible very quickly.
So for our listeners, you know, we've kind of talked about things bike shops are doing, and you have kind of held, Elizabeth, your kind of mentor that got you involved in the sport has become really a big highlight for the episode as just the way to do it. And, you know, you're still here today as a pro triathlete, you know, kind of because of it. For our listeners, you know, whether they're male or female, who maybe have a friend or a family member that they would love to introduce to the sport, kind of what are both of your top tips for getting someone else riding?
I mean, to kind of go by the example that I was provided, I would say go with them. Don't just encourage them to get started on their own, but really be a part of that process. You know, let them borrow one of your bikes. We know you probably have more than one. So allow them to, you know, borrow one of your older ones, take them riding, teach them. And yeah, you know, those little things like how to change a flat tire, what to do when your chain drops. All of that is just so important so that they not only fall in love with the sport, but feel confident in being able to kind of carry out some of those hurdles that they might come encounter with too. I know that this has been, you know, a challenging year for a number of reasons, but I have to admit that some of the things I've been most disappointed that have been canceled were some of the women's events that we had planned. And last year, I was able to do just one with a local triathlon club, and we had a specific women's night, and it was just fantastic. We, you know, sat down, had some good conversations about sport, were able to go out and be active together for a little while, and we had planned to continue that into 2020. And so I hope that as we can kind of
2021, it'll pick back
yes,
up.
Yeah. As we can gather back together again, we can get some of those things going, because it was just such an empowering event. Was wonderful, and I hope that we can continue to be, you know, that support and organize those things to get people excited.
Yeah, Elizabeth, you mentioned, you know, kind of taking one of your spare bikes, since we all have,
yes.
if you're doing it right, you have many. Mm-hmm. So off camera or off recording last time, John and I were talking with Rachel about her bike collection, and Rachel has a very impressive collection of bikes that she owns and rides. So Rachel, is that something that you do? Do you kind of take your Bromptons out and let a girlfriend kind of ride one for the first time and get an introduction to the sport that way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my response to your question was just going to be, yeah, what she said, because that's exactly, I can just be Elizabeth's like hype woman. I mean, I agree completely and comprehensively that it's no different. We're not splitting the atom here, right? This isn't rocket science, and it's no different than any other subject or facet of life. It's that, you know, when you have somebody, a buddy, a friend, a girlfriend, a mentor, somebody who introduces you and makes you feel welcome and unafraid to ask questions or to do something new, to try something that you haven't before, the excitement and the willingness and the motivation to get involved, it changes. It increases for sure. The bikes that I have, it's so funny. My car is parked in my driveway and my bikes are in the garage, which is, I think, the way that it should be, by the way.
yes. Yep.
I have a pretty big extended family of, and not by blood, just chosen family. And during the quarantine part of the spring, early summer, where, you know, everything was pretty much shut down for everyone, I had the opportunity to get young people who had not had the opportunity or experience of riding in the saddle. And what we are seeing, at least as far as the bike industry is concerned, is this overwhelming need or demand for bicycles that is so great that the supply isn't able to meet those needs. It's one of the first times in a very, very long time that local bike shops are so inundated with business that they can almost not keep up, right? So we're in this golden age of bicycling and racing, whether it's on the road or multi-sport, you know, within the triathlon community. And people are riding more than ever. Part of it is because, you know, some folks are still hesitant or apprehensive about participating in indoor athletic activities. And there's just this extra free time to do something different or new. And people are going back to where they began, right? They remember what it was like to ride a bicycle as a child. And so they are using that as this segue into making it a family activity or something you do with friends. And it might be partially because of a lack of other options. But I really believe, and at Bike Law, we believe that this trend is going to stick around. So that's really, really good news. And yeah, getting friends and my kids' friends on bikes, using those extra bicycles sitting in my garage, it's one of my favorite things to do.
Representation in sports can be a very powerful thing. What does it do for women when they see their peers getting active and supporting one another and being badasses on bicycles, particularly in the context of cycling and triathlon?
Well, there's strength in numbers, you know, and belonging is a human biological imperative. Peer pressure is also a thing. I remember the first full Ironman where I was a spectator, and it was Ironman Arizona. And I remember just being completely enamored with Mikaylee Jones, and seeing her cross the finish line and watching her engage with her fans. That was a pivotal moment for me, in addition to supporting and being like I am a mediocre competitive triathlete, but I am a podium level Sherpa. I will just have everybody know I'm really good at cheering.
That's an important skill set.
Absolutely. You know, exposure and education and excitement and access to resources are really important. So when I go to races, and triathlon is really, really unique in a way that cycling by itself or other sports aren't, right? The idea that on any course, I could be running next to Marinda Carfrae. Now, she's 15 miles ahead of me, but that's not the point. The point is that I have that direct, that connection, that human interaction with the women that are performing at the most elite level in the sport that I love so much. So absolutely, I agree with you that, you know, seeing women who are such strong trailblazing advocates for sport participating alongside of you, that's incredibly compelling.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I would say, you know, in anything that we're looking to accomplish, I just find it incredibly empowering to see what others have done and then to surround yourself, whether that's actually in person or just by the examples that we can follow, but to surround yourself with people who are going to help you succeed and become that best version of yourself.
And I would encourage, just as both of you guys are saying that, you know, we kind of opened the show, and this wasn't intentionally done. I'm kind of patting myself on the back now. But as we open the show talking about following pros on social media, you know, go out of your way to find some great example women in the sport who are just being successful and who, you know, just like Heather Jackson, that Rachel mentioned, are real on social media and showing you the day in and day out, you know, struggles and victories and, you know, all angles of it. You know, go find some folks to follow. Start watching Pro Tour women's events on TV or mm-hmm. streaming if you can find them, because it does do a lot to show you that they're out there and they're crushing it and they're killing it. So Elizabeth, you know, Rachel, who are maybe a few of the women in the sport for you that you follow and admire and kind of have drawn inspiration from, you know, for your own endurance sport journeys?
Okay. Well, I think I'm going to go the cycling route this time, just because we talked triathlon a little bit in the warm up. So there's so many again, man. I feel like we've been able to highlight so many, which is fantastic. I'm going to start with Marianne Voss. She's one of them. Her nickname, she is known as the Cannibal, and that tells you right away just how fierce of a competitor she is. She is a decorated cyclist, numerous titles. I mean, she has world championship wins in road cycling and cyclocross, along with an Olympic gold medal. So just, I mean, absolutely dominating when it comes to cycling performance. I guess another one that I want to highlight is Judy Robinson. I believe she's like 80 years old now, and I want to be like Judy Robinson when I grow up. She's just staying active, encouraging others to be active by, you know, leading a number of group rides, cycling events. So I'll say those two.
Piggybacking on what you brought up, Andrew, about following these pro athletes or these women on social media, you know, in the mid 90s, every boy who had ever picked up a basketball would have given his left or right leg to have a conversation with Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That is a dynamic between fans and sports celebrities or any celebrity that will exist until the end of time. What makes people like Heather Jackson or another one of my favorite female pro triathletes, Amy Van Tassel, VT, or Lizzie Nitre, some of my most favorite women in sport, is that there's, even when there's a crossing of boundaries by fans, for example, some, you know, Heather sitting down having dinner with her family and a very excited fangirl, fanboy, whoever it is, approaches. I mean, she could have a mouthful of salad and she still takes the time to give a hug or a high five.
Yeah.
And that willingness to share parts of their intimate personal lives with complete strangers just because there's a shared passion and love for sport is something that is unique to these women in sport, these pro triathletes for sure. But my list, Inga Thompson, three-time Olympian and Tour de France racer, Anne Groniger, who is my bike law North Carolina attorney, Nidra Deadweiler, she runs Civil Bikes in Atlanta. Not particularly celebrity level famous, but in my cycling world, she's an incredibly important advocate and woman on a bike. Catherine Dornbos, who's the former director of Redemptive Cycles in Birmingham. Katie Zimmerman, the director of Charleston Moves, who takes every single trip by bicycle. She is a true commuter.
Nice.
I'm going to touch on Lizzie again, just because if you ever have the opportunity to eat one of her baked goods, then that is enough motivation and inspiration to then go on a really long bike ride, because you can't just have one. Diane Jenks, who hosts the podcast The Outspoken Cyclist and has been involved in the bike industry for a very, very long time. And of course, Heather Mason and Lauren Heffron of Women's Cycling Day.
Always happy to see a podcaster get a shout out for their podcast. So yeah, The Outspoken Cyclist. I have heard of that one. So, I mean, thanks to both of you for sharing there. I'm going to tell our audience, go follow Rachel Maney and Elizabeth James on Instagram and Facebook as well. They're great people, and they've taken some time out of their day today to talk about Women's Cycling Day. And Rachel, just one more time for our ladies and gentlemen out there who want to kind of get some more information. What's the website to find out more about that event on October 10th?
So it's womenscyclingday.com. You know, super, super easy. I do recommend following them on Instagram. Go and check out their website. You can find them also on bikelaw.com and on our social media channels, as well as on my personal social media. And the great thing about, just like you said, Women's Cycling Day is that it is inclusive, that there are ways for our male counterparts to support and participate, of course. It's just exclusive, right? That it really highlights and illuminates the very special role that women on bikes play in the growth of cycling here in the U.S.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
The last time we had Rachel join us, she gave us just kind of a quick glimpse of what makes Challenge Daytona a special race for athletes. And the event sounded so fun, and her reasons to come to Florida and race were so compelling that John Mayfield, coach here at TriDot, and myself, we've booked our flights, we've booked our accommodation, and we will be there on site for Challenge Daytona this December. Rachel, we're so excited to come. And we've already mentioned that Bike Law is a proud partner of Challenge Daytona. And you, because of that, kind of have the ultimate scoop on this race. So for anybody looking for a December race, you know, on the Florida coast, what do they need to know about this one?
So I think that the most important thing is that there is something for everybody. There are plenty of race organizations, and, you know, as a competitive triathlete, every single one of us has participated in an event where you might walk or limp away feeling like there was something left to be desired. And my experience with the Challenge Family Organization and Challenge Daytona is that they completely eliminate that missing piece. They check that box for sure. So whether you want to bring, it's a family focused event, your kids can do a fun run, there's a 5K, there is a sprint option, there's the middle distance, there's a really unique pro format for the pro race. And it really is a weekend that is centered around the need and the experience of each athlete, regardless of competitive level or, you know, speed, strength, age. There's something there for everybody as far as participation is concerned. And there is just this celebratory feel. I think part of that is because it is an end of year race. But I think this year really has the opportunity to be even more exciting and special, because a lot of us have waited and been disappointed by the cancellation of other races that were on our calendar. So this one, we're good to go. It's a definite, so you can count on that. And the experience is as unique as the course itself, right? There is absolutely nothing like riding your bicycle on the Daytona International Speedway. For the short course folks, the entire course is contained within the speedway. So there is a lake that's in the middle, a man-made lake.
Lake Lloyd.
Exactly. That's right. And so you swim, bike, and run all within the speedway, making it one of the safest courses that I'm aware of on the planet. So that for me, of course, as a bike advocate is very important. And Challenge has done a phenomenal job of protecting its athletes.
Everybody deserves a bike course picture of themselves in Aero on their tri bike on Daytona International Speedway with the grandstands behind them on the racetrack. And Rachel, I'll say this: you mentioned like COVID race cancellations and races not happening this year. In my time, and the entire time I've been on staff with TriDot, you know, I've got my TriDot tri kit, and I haven't gotten the race in it yet. I haven't gotten to rep the TriDot colors, the black and red of TriDot. Yet in a race, as I've done the TriDot podcast for a full year now. And so I'm just thrilled out of my mind just to have the opportunity to kind of rep those colors and get on a race course in my TriDot kit and rep the company and training that I love so much. I'm racing the half. Rachel, I know you're racing the sprint. Kind of tell us a little bit about what the courses are like for the different distances there.
So, for the middle distance, you know, it's pretty standard. So you're going to swim in that lake and then you're going to do part of the bike course in the speedway and then part of it outside of the speedway. And then you come back and return and the same for the run. So for the pros who are also doing the race in that mixed format, I think what's really unique about this, and we've talked a lot about the relationship between professional representation in sport and how amateurs, age groupers, or novice athletes then make their segue into whatever sport that is. The cool thing is the pro race is at a different time. So you get to fully spectate and cheer for and engage, which is really, really cool. The other thing is that there is $1 million prize purse for the pros this year. The reason that I bring that up is because, and I think that, you know, obviously Elizabeth as a pro, she can, you know, can confirm, but this is how a lot of these people, this is how they make their living, right? And so when you look at what they're posting on social media or why they're posting it, you know, there's this obligation to promote their sponsors and to engage their fans and their followers about these different products. But this is an opportunity that gives these women and men a chance to make some money doing what they actually do, which is participating in sport, competing at the highest, most elite level. And I think that that's really important too. So the fact that this is happening at Challenge Daytona is, at least for me, another feather in the cap in our partnership or Bike Law's partnership with this race organization.
Well, I know that Andrew and John have been trying to convince me to come race at Challenge Daytona anyway. And so maybe this was, you know, the final push that I needed. Maybe I need to add this to my schedule
you
as well.
The pro field.
I mean, perfect. I can cheer you on. You can cheer me on the way that they
We're
have
not
this
racing
set out.
At the same time. We can all cheer Rachel on.
Yeah, I think this sounds like a great weekend.
Rachel, we'll see you in Daytona.
That sounds fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it. And you can find us, of course, at the expo and all over the course. I usually am out there with a megaphone and a tutu and a lot of Bike Law friends and other multi-sport athletes just celebrating. You know, it's the end of the year. This has been an incredibly difficult year for everybody. And so the culmination of what this has been for each of us, I think is going to be pretty exciting and special. And, you know, the last 2 years at Challenge Daytona have been nothing short of a really, really great time.
Well, that's it for today, folks. I want to thank Rachel Maney from Bike Law and Coach Elizabeth James for talking about women in the sport of cycling and Women's Cycling Day. Shout out to Tri-Bike Transport for partnering with us on today's episode. Enjoying the podcast? Have any triathlon questions or topics you want to hear us talk about? Head to tridot.com/podcast and click on Submit Feedback to let us know what you're thinking. We'll have a new show coming your way soon. Until then, happy training.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your